Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Loan Rope X, Stacks, and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 650 as we're waiting for the big CPI number, but I don't know how big it is. We were waiting yesterday for the big PPI number. Came in lousy, and we're up anyway. So we don't know what big means. It's a big, big show, though, Kevin. What do you think? Ed Sullivan, It's a really big show. Maybe bring out some animal act. Well, you know, we've got us.
That really was an amazing variety show, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You could get anything from, you know, from rock bands to opera singers to... the stage actors, you know, performances of state from musicals, and then you'd get, you know, plate spinners and acrobats and of all kinds, and you know, God knows what else you could get, you know, dancing animals, you know, whatever it was, families just gathered around the TV and. You know, on Sunday nights and watched Ed Sullivan. There was something in it for everybody.
Wasn't, and later in the night it was Bonanza was on, right? That was the number one show for a long time.
Could have been. You know, I remember Ed Sullivan from Sunday nights, but I don't remember what night Bonanza was on.
I think Ed Sullivan was early, 7 to 8, something like that.
Could have been.
I'm not sure. Boy, a long time ago. But the...
You know, one of the high-numbered cable channels has old Ed Sullivan shows.
Really?
On it. I don't know if they do the whole show or if they do clips of it, but it's, you know, it's kind of fun to watch for 5 minutes as you're scrolling by, and see who they have on there.
Well, yeah, the TV, the cameras and stuff were kind of bizarre.
And he had a lot of sway in the entertainment industry. If you were an up and comer and you got on the Sullivan Show, it was a big deal. Sort of like Carson later, especially Carson for Comedians.
Well, he was much more of a mover and a shaker, I think, before he left New York. Because anybody who came to play in New York was invited on the Johnny Carson Show. It was like, you know, it was like Fox in the Morning here for a while. If you were in Chicago, you came on the Fox in the Morning Show, although Johnny Carson obviously was national. But, I mean, you know, if those guys were all playing, I mean, everybody who played at the Copacabana had a spot on the Carson Show. We have these numbers coming out today, Kevin. Last night I was looking at CNBC, and there was a big thing on there about, what's going on with all they're talking about is people getting laid off work. You know, this going bad, that going bad, and is the market going to have to deal with a recession that people can't ignore this time? Or does the market even care? Because I have obviously the lesson that investors have learned, and I think learned properly, actually, because it's right in front of your face. It's not like it was a bad lesson, is that when the market doesn't seem in today's world, with the Fed doing what they're doing, which is essentially maintaining wealth, doesn't seem to really matter whether the market matches up with the economy. I mean, you look at some of the meme stocks this week, they double and triple. It's not like their profit doubled or tripled or anything like that. It's just something between the market fabric and the movement and people shoving stuff up and nobody being in the way and no standing orders, some combination of things that I probably, I'd have to get with Kenny and a bunch of other people to write a book about somehow has something sort of weird. And a lot of it has to do with constant degrading of currency. But people love it because people don't quite get it. And they're never going to because it's too complicated of an issue. And it's just not something that's in your DNA if you're in the U.S., especially if you're anywhere from the Midwest. And I, as a guy who struggled through international economics because all the other guys in there were from Europe and knew all this crap, and I didn't. I get it, you know. So it's not like I'm degrading people for not knowing what's going on, but it is pretty scary. And I have an article here that says, "Don't worry about a recession if you got stocks. We're going to go up because they're going to pour some money back into place." And now we've got these inflation numbers. We'll see today now whether they're able to. Plus, I don't trust. You know, it's weird, Kevin. I don't trust any of these people. I mean, be it Democrats, Republicans, I think this number has been leaked for 3-4 days. I'd be absolutely stunned, and you know, I don't want to be stunned when the market goes down, but because I don't want it to go down. But I'd be stunned if this number hasn't been out there for a week. Certainly since Powell talked a while ago.
Well, certainly if that's the case, then the market's already adjusted, hasn't it?
Well, that's right. It's been up every day. I mean, and yesterday the PPI number, everybody laughed at that. That came in, you know, what, 0.5, 0.6? I mean, some huge number. Actually, the services were 0.6, and the goods were 0.4. The average was 0.5, I think. Well, 0.5 times 12 is 6, right? That's a long way from 2. I mean, the last I checked.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit of a gap, is it not?
Yeah. And, you know, I just wonder how this. We talked a lot with John on Monday regarding, you know, this world and government, and how you know, what does it mean to have growth for everybody versus growth for a few? And I really do believe, and you know, want to keep beating up the horse, but that if the whole place is not growing, then everybody gets the idea that anybody who's doing well is somehow cheating other people, and to a large extent, they're probably right. I mean, I'm not talking about the person who goes to work every day and works overtime, and everybody knows that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is somebody's going to scam a government contract, somebody's going to do something, somebody's going to scam a patent, somebody's going to charge you $1,000 for a shot that costs them $2 to make. That's what people are seeing, because that's what's happening. The regular schmuck doing the regular stuff, the regular kids coming out of school, getting a job, there's no way they're maintaining that they have any chance of doing the stuff that people came out of school in our era, or even an era after that, in terms of being able to buy a business, be able to do this, be able to buy a house, not even close. The only thing you got going for is you got parents with money, because they'll dump you the down payment because they probably have money if they've got wealth. So, but other than that, and, you know, the weird part, Kevin, is everybody accepts it. Everybody accepts it, and I don't know why they do. I mean, Lou sent us this thing. We've talked from time to time, and I wonder if you guys have a class or ever talk about it in a class. It's probably, don't take this wrong, over the head of the people there trying to learn something worthwhile. But what is you hear mostly, don't think this one, the right wingers talk about, you know, capitalist system, profit, you know, all this kind of stuff. Kevin, I love that system. I just don't recognize it anymore, do you? Where people actually do stuff, and I mean, yeah, somebody's gonna. So we know people that buy a house that needs fixing up, bust their ass to fix it up, and sell it for a profit. That's spectacular capitalism. We see some of that, but that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing people at nonprofits making 10 times more than people at, or 3 times more than people at profit companies. You see, profit companies that wouldn't pay a dividend if their life depended on it. When those are the people that own the place. I mean, we see. I don't. The idea of a standard profit model is what percentage of the world now? 10, 20, maybe 25?
It sort of depends on what world you live in, Tom.
What's I'm saying?
When you get, you know, I brought up the idea of microeconomies before. There are some economies where, you know, yes, the large businesses are part of the grift, and even so, you know, I can even talk about where I live, where, you know, yes, there still are the connected businesses and the connected people, but by the same token, there's a pretty vibrant and pretty competitive small business community here that you know, that really is, you know, it really does follow the capitalistic model more than you'd think.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I said it's becoming. Lou sent this thing out. It's an article here. We should probably get Andrew to tweet it out. It's it's from the Free Press. I don't know who wrote the damn thing, but they're talking about. Of course, you know, they got their edge. It's the stuff that's going on the border. Okay, it's the right wing press, so that part. But as you know, Kevin, I'm a guy. I'll read anything from any side, because in there, there's going to be stuff I'm learning, even if I don't really like the edge to the article. But this is what's happened.
If there are cited and verifiable statistics in there, for instance, that's worth having.
That's what I'm saying. And it reminds me so much of what's going on here in Chicago. We're talking about these companies now. I mean, if Mike was on, he could tell us more, because we never asked him this question. I use the word intrusion of contractors into the military. All right, so you've got your people that are in the military, you know, over there, whatever, you know, doing their job, and they're getting paid X. Well, the people in the military, in a lot of places now, you don't clean the toilets, you don't do the mess hall, you don't do the laundry, that kind of thing. They have private contractors. Those guys make a hell of a lot more than people in the military. I mean, that's a profit motive. So it's not like, you know, somebody just runs the, you know, can you imagine on a ship where all of a sudden maybe it's happening, the people who run the meals 24 hours a day or some company making a fortune? Well, Lou sent this thing out. It has to do with CEO, all the stuff that's going on with the migrant world. The outfits, these are allegedly nonprofits, Global Refuge, Southwest Key Programs, Endeavors Inc. You ever heard of those guys, Kevin?
I had not heard of them specifically, but I was aware of this situation.
I was through you. Thank you. But I mean, it's the same as in Chicago. I mean,
Let's get the whole sentence out for these guys. That you have a lot of non-government organizations that are making a whole hell of a lot of money, providing services to people who come into the country,
or the military, or whatever it is. I mean, it's all over the place, right?
Yeah, but the specific article was about was related to immigration,
right? But if it was in Chicago. It's the community organizers who get the jobs programs. It's all over the place. And what I'm saying is, if you look at the
there's a whole cottage industry around illegal immigration right now.
Right. I'm saying.
And you're right, and there is for everything else too. I don't mean to diminish that.
No, but we talk about
when you talk about community organizers, it's not some altruistic person who is out there, trying to make lives better. Maybe that's part of it, but they also have a way of lining their pockets. And if you're a CEO type of community organizer, you can do pretty darn well.
But I guess the point I'm clumsily trying to make here is you would think that these would be like capitalist when I say capitalist companies. Well, I guess they are, because somebody's making money, but they're all considered to be nonprofits, right? And the guys that are CEO compensation is like $1 million or $500,000.
Yep.
I mean, do you know anybody in your world, I say your world, the people you're always talking about in Indiana and Michigan there, how many CEOs make $1 million? Any? If they do, it's from stock.
There might be some. I'd have to go look.
Salary.
I'd probably look at some of their filings, but, we have a few very large companies here. So.
Well, I'm not talking about a CEO that maybe started the place, still owns 40% of the stock, and the other 60% of the stock, they get a dividend too, type of thing. No, but there's no sharing here. This is just, we're getting a thing. I'm hiring some people for as less as I can, and it's the personal. It's just different, Kevin. I don't know what this description is. It's just different.
Yeah, it would be no different in many ways than a pastor of a church making $1 million.
Yeah. I think most of these what do they call them? NGOs. What is that?
Non-government organizations, yes.
Okay. And So it's, and these guys obviously provide a lot of support to whoever giving them the money. How do you get in the group to get this stuff? This is get a load of this. Endeavor in 1921, Endeavor's paid Christy Merrill, a music therapist, $533,000.
Not bad.
An internal Endeavor's PowerPoint obtained by America First Legal, which means they must have gone to the place and robbed it or something. An outfit founded by former Trump aide Stephen Miller showed that the nonprofit conducted 1,656 people plant interactions and 287 pet therapy sessions between April 2021 and March 2023. Endeavor's 2022 federal disclosure form also showed it paid $5 million to another company to provide fill-in doctors and nurses. Because, you know, once you get money, then you immediately send half with another place because you don't really want to do the work, right? $4.6 million for consulting services. I'm a consultant. How come I didn't get a check? $1.4 million to attend conferences. You got to like that. $700,000 on lobbyists.
You know, when you're spending $1.4 million on conferences, you know how much of that you're spending on the conference and how much of that you're spending on luxury travel?
Oh, well, 90%.
Because you're a CEO, you got to fly first class. And you have to
Don't try not to be a piker on this show. You have your own jet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got a charter. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We don't want any pike. It's like, I could see a guy like you when the Notre Dame played Southern Cal that time when all the white Gulf Streams are coming in. I could see you trying to get in the line with like a piper or something. Yeah, I got my own private plane. Get out of here with that thing.
Yeah, and then I could just chopper over to campus for the game.
Yeah, yeah. You can just land the piper in a field. Or the parking lot. If it wasn't full.
If it was, yeah, if I get there early enough.
But get a load of this. Here's the key number. $700,000 on lobbyists. Why 5 years out of school, why didn't you and I become a lobbyist?
Didn't live any place with a lobby, I guess.
Well, you know, I was amazed at the guy who was the lobbyist for the CBOE. Tommy Boggs. They were, it was a law firm, but they were a lobbyist firm. Patton Boggs and Blow was the name of the place. How's that for a name?
It sounds like something out of a Three Stooges episode.
Yeah.
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Yeah, the, Dr. Fine. Tommy was, Hale Box's kid, right? Oh, I know that. And sister was Cokie Roberts. So they had their in. I mean, all these guys are somehow related to somebody or other. And one of the keys, that's the reason why a lot of the, former representatives and stuff become lobbyists. I think, Kevin, you get a lifetime membership to the Congressional Health Club, don't you? That you can go in there and talk to guys where they're working out and nobody else can? It's some scummy thing like that. It's anyway, but I mean, so this money, what I'm saying is, in the economy, do you think these people have any idea that everybody else is making, you know, $50,000 and their rents go up every month? I mean, we've totally separated this country out. I mean, I read about the 20s. They claim it was worse, but I wasn't here, so I don't know. But would you like any one of these jobs versus what we're doing? I mean, I wouldn't. I like doing what I'm doing. I like my clients.
I'd still have to live with myself. So
I'm sure.
No, I wouldn't want it, but it would. It's fun to think about having all the trappings of being connected.
I'll bet they think they're doing the world's job. They're doing Christ's work, for God's sake.
Well, they do think that because they know darn well. That they know what's best for all of us.
Yeah, well, it's, you know.
It's a heavy burden to carry, Tom. And I'm totally empathetic, but, you know.
What did the judge say?
I learned to scrape by without their input.
What did Judge Schmale say? I've sent guys to the gas chamber younger than you. I felt they deserved it. Was it deserved it or wanted it or needed it or something?
Needed it or something like that.
God.
It taught a very fine lesson.
Yeah, yeah. But these are the guys that are getting all. And who are the other article last week was from Blackwater. Didn't they get all this money from the government?
Yeah, they're not called Blackwater anymore. It was too much of a bad name to have. So they're called something else. But yeah.
Well, Blackwater is water you can't drink, right?
I would I wouldn't drink it.
Well, potable water you can drink, and was it black water you can't?
Although, yeah, it could just as well be coffee, which I'm drinking right now.
So you're going to head for a couple of minutes and jump in the car?
Yeah, I'm going to run out and jump in the car. I am going over to CareerQuest. I can tell you what that's about after break.
All right, S&P futures up one. NASDAQ is down five. Again, we're waiting for the numbers. We'll have a big report on that when Dan is on. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 250. NASDAQ futures down a buck. We're kind of doing nothing here before the CPI number comes out at 7:30, which we'll talk about at length with Dan. I've already got it loaded up on my machine here. The CPI, the whole grid and the whole mess. So anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 77.4%. We stuck up yesterday afternoon, and these guys were not. So maybe a little catch up. FTSE up 24.3%. CAC around down 9.1%. So slightly the upside over there. Nikkei up 29. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 41.2%. But over 19,000. Wow, a long way. They were under 16 not that long ago. China decided to put some more money in, and they've done what everybody is doing, these pump up markets. Shanghai down 25, it's 0.8%, 31.19. Yesterday, way of review, the Dow was up 126, S&P up 25, NASDAQ up 122. This was after a pretty horrible PPI number, but it didn't seem to matter. Bonds, 10-year down 4 basis points, 4.41. So I'm going to say this. I'd be really shocked if this is a bad number, because I think this thing leaked is a good number. Bund down 7 basis points, 2.47. Japan down 1.95. We have oil down 47 cents, a ways under 80 now, 77.55. Brent down 53 cents, 81.85. Natural gas up 2 cents, 236. RBOB unchanged, 246. Gold up 1060, 23.70. It's trying to make a run at 2400 here. It was up again yesterday. Silver up 36 cents, 29.07. See if it stays over 29 this time. Every time it gets there, it gets smacked down. We'll see. Copper up a dime, $5. Wow. Copper's been the... That's really something. But it's been really gradual, but steady from 390 to $5 in the last few months. U.S. dollar. Euro it actually weakened a little bit. 108 on the euro and 126 on the British pound. We have Bitcoin is up at 80, 62,430. A lot of stuff. What do you got us... Traffic, weather, and sports. Boy, the Cubs suck last night. Just saying.
Oops. Yeah, they did. We have kind of not good all overall for some baseball, but it is currently Wednesday, May 15th, 6:36 here in Chicago. Yeah, nothing but losses here from our favorite teams. The White Sox lost to the Nationals 6-3. The Cubs lost to the Braves 7-0, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Reds 6-2. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently looking a little bit better than that today. We are at 52 degrees. We got cloudy skies. That's going to hang around for nearly the whole day. We're going to have a high of 58, and that's going to hit around 4 p.m. And over in Phoenix, they are currently at, let's see, they're currently at 73 degrees. They're going to have clear skies. That's also going to stick around most of the day. They're going to have a high 95 around 5 p.m. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, we have thankfully no major accidents to report, but traffic is building pretty quickly and steadily on all the major inbound expressways. Expect pretty heavy delays coming in the Eisenhower near 17th Avenue. Same thing on the Stevenson near Central Avenue. And always on that Kennedy, especially about near Irving Park Road. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Do we have Kevin back? He's not here with us.
Yeah, I'm back.
You're back. There you go. What, it's... How come the Cubs didn't make a move on this Chris Sale? Boy, he looked like the old Chris Sale last night. They couldn't touch him.
Well, Chris Sale has, I don't think he's pitched in the last 2 years before this, maybe 130 innings total. So, you know, the Braves took a shot, and so far so good for them. But, you know, Chris Sale has become very injury prone, and I can understand an up-and-coming, an established team taking a shot at him, but I don't know that an up-and-coming team that has a lot of pitching prospects is going to want to spend a lot of time with him in the rotation instead of trying to develop some guys.
Well, that's true. They got him going like every 5 days or maybe even every 6 days, but, man, if they can make it to the playoffs, they could have used him in the last couple of years. They fell like one game short every year, right?
Well, they could have used him the last couple of years, except that he spent most of those years on the IL. So, you know, what are you going to do about that?
Well, that's a problem. But he sure looked like he had some gas left.
That is a small problem.
Well, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen. You know, we sure as hell aren't doctors. I don't think I've ever seen a team as young as the Cubs with this many injuries. What are they doing? Is every pitcher throwing every single pitch as hard as he possibly can, or what? Something's different.
Well, I think that's part of it, although, you know, Kyle Hendricks wasn't the hardest thrower going, and he spent some time on the injured list, and, you know, Alzolay's not a 100-mile-an-hour guy, so, you know, he's out now. I don't know. I would love somebody to, because so many of these are, you know, soft tissue issues, you know, muscular things and things like that. And I said this to you, I think, over the weekend. I wonder how many of these guys have been vaccinated and boosted all along, and, you know, and they're starting to, and we're seeing that. Because this is not just the Cubs. This is all over baseball where there's a ton of injuries. They're talking about it. You know, people want to blame the pitch clock on it, saying guys don't have enough time between pitches to recover, and they're still going to throw as hard as they can because that's what they need to do to get people out. But, you know, they're not throwing as many innings. I don't know what to tell you, Tom, is going on, but it's very weird. The Cubs have an inordinate amount, but if you look around baseball, so do a lot of other teams.
Well, I look at some of the hitters, and I know my uncle, who is an amazing character, but he was a logical guy. He said, there's only a few people in the lineup you got to bring your best stuff to. Although now I know they want you to just go all out for everybody, but I saw somebody the other day. I saw somebody throwing a ball like 99 miles an hour to get the Cubs catcher out. God, Kevin, you get him out underhanded for God's sake. In softball, I knew the guys I had to worry about. The other guys just put it over. They couldn't hurt you. They might drop one in, but they're not going to hurt you. There's soft spots in all these lineups.
Unfortunately, that's another unfortunate thing for the Cubs is that they're among their soft spots are guys that have been historically pretty good hitters, and theoretically they'll come around because most guys find their way back to their averages. But geez, when you have guys out, you can't afford to have an Ian Happ struggling, or you can't or before he was injured, Dansby Swanson's struggling, because when those guys aren't hitting, you're kind of counting on them to be a big part of your run production, and then you start taking a Suzuki out who was hitting well, or a Bellinger out, then you're talking problems here. Their mission right now, I was talking to my daughter about this last night when they were getting their brains beat in. So their mission right now is to just stay in the race until they can get healthy. And if they never get healthy, they're not going to go anywhere. But, that's all that they have to do. Heck, it would be nice if they would score a run, though. They haven't scored a run the last two games.
It's hard to name. But they really didn't come close last night. That guy was on. I was looking at those pitches, and I'm sitting there going, better those guys than me. That ball is moving all over the place.
He's always had, he's always had a very live pitch that moves a lot. And then to go with that, a funky motion, that throws people off. When healthy Chris Sale is an outstanding pitcher. Unfortunately, there hasn't been much healthy Chris Sale, and I wonder if part of that is the funky motion. We see that with Kerry Wood too. The motion was part of his effectiveness, but it was probably also a big part of his injury history.
His biggest flaw was actually there was a guy, the Tribune, back when the Tribune was a real paper, they used to give this guy, like every couple of months, they would give him the whole back page of the sports section, and he was a doctor that does just charts muscles and sporting moves and things like that, and he would take. One month he'd talk about sprinting. And the whole back page would be about sprinting and fast and all the different misconceptions there are about sprinting. And I remember this, so no matter who you are, and I forget the actual numbers now, it doesn't matter whether you're a world-class sprinter or you're some big fatso, if you start to sprint, no matter who you are, it's something like 5 or 8 steps or something, maybe 10, but I think it's more like 8, you reach your maximum speed, then your conditioning keeps you there for like a little bit, but nobody, he says, there is absolutely no such thing as a finishing kick for basically a balls out sprinter. Now so
your finishing kick is not fading as much as the guy next to you.
Exactly. The only guy that he might have been wrong about, because I don't think he ever had to go as fast as he could, unless somebody was close to him. Who's the guy that won the guy from Dominican Republic? What was his name? The guy that won like every sprint.
Jamaica, Usain Bolt.
Yeah, but that guy, I don't think he ever had to go as fast as he really could. So he actually probably could go a little faster to the end if he needed to. But other than that, you pretty much can't. That's it.
Side issue, Bolt had one of the all-time great T-shirts out there. It said, crawl, walk, run, Bolt.
God. Well, they talked about pitchers, and they said, for any kind of pitcher, and you and I, if you thought about it, Kevin, we've played enough baseball to know when you make a throw, I said, the guy said, it's such an unnatural motion. The only way you can make it natural. And Kerry Wood's issue is when he came forward with his left foot, the foot wasn't pointing toward the plate. It was pointing a little bit off to the side, which means he had to come across his body a little more than he had.
As a right-hander to the third base side.
Yes.
Of it, yeah.
And so that's why when he came back from his injury, he never threw from a windup anymore. It was always out of the stretch.
Yeah.
But anyway, the guy said, when you throw, the tip of your index finger and middle finger, all the way through your shoulder blades, to the other hand, to those fingers, should form a straight line. Now, Dylan Cease obviously does not. And if you're under, I forget which one it was. If you're under, you're going to have shoulder problems. If you're older, you're going to have elbow problems. And this is when, what's his name? Who's the guy? He was on TV for a while. Orr Hershiser. He was one of the people that he had in there and said he was slightly under the line, and he was pitching like every 4 days. He was 200 innings a year guy. He said he's going to have an elbow problem at some point. Sure enough, the next year he did. But he said the only two people that were absolutely perfect at that time in baseball were Nolan Ryan and Greg Maddux. Their mechanics were absolutely perfect, so they pretty much could.
I'd throw in Tom Seaver in there too.
Okay, but I mean this is after Seaver kind of retired, but. And I'm going to say Fergie was probably there because they used to call the guys with the rubber arm that could throw every day and never bother them. He used to throw batting practice between starts, and he went every fourth day. But he said, yeah, if you have that ability to keep that line perfect, you can pretty much pitch forever. If not, you can name the injuries. It's just a question of how many innings you're pitching and that kind of thing. But you know right where the problem's going to be. Really interesting stuff that the guy wrote about. He wrote
the physiology of it is great, and it's something that they they really need to start coaching that in youth baseball, and stop having them throw curveballs, and I'd like to see it translate too to ACLs for women athletes.
Yeah, that just seems to be. That's an issue, right? I mean,
it's a huge issue.
Why is it more of an issue for women?
I think it's physiology that it's just the build, and the differences in muscle mass and distribution of muscle mass. I think all of that comes into play. But in basketball, for example, I always find myself, when somebody in a men's game lands awkwardly and goes down, I say, oh crap, looks like an ankle injury, like I rolled the ankle or something. When a woman does it, I call that stuck the ACL landing, and you just know it when you see it. It's and I've seen it in person a number of times, so it's too bad because it's not that unusual a landing as in terms of the sport, but it is a big deal. I have a theory that some women with a little bit wider build that aren't quite as slender may be less susceptible to it, but I don't have the data to prove that.
Well, some guys are some guys are the same way. Some, I mean, there's whole families where the whole family has fake hips by the time they're 40, and other people never seem to have a problem, and it's just weird. So these numbers today, as we head into the election season, are we ever out of an election season now? I guess remember when we were young, they didn't start campaigning until after Labor Day. Can we go back to that? Wouldn't that be?
I would love it.
Wouldn't that be?
I would love it, man. I get texts all the time now from candidates, campaigns, PACs, all those kind of people. And I just, every one of them, I just hit spam, so that they don't come back.
Yeah, it's a, but
I had a nice one from Tulsi Gabbard the other day. It was nice to hear from her.
There you go. It's a, get some interesting people that are running, but I guess, it's a sign of the times, but you just wonder what the numbers add up. And if Trump gets in, I don't care what he what his people want him to do, somebody's going to have to get some more revenue someplace or drop some of these expenses. And I don't see.
Yeah, look, the biggest problem, Tom, is spending, and it's going to be really hard to make any significant spending issues go away. Medicare and Medicaid are huge, so those are a big part of the equation, and I don't see anybody willing to take those on in any meaningful way.
When you say Medicare, you're really not talking about Medicare. You're talking about the drug companies, the hospitals, and
I'm talking about the grift that goes with it. Yeah.
Well, how do you ever? I mean, you see, in Chicago here, we're down to. I don't know all of them, but basically, you're down to what? Three or four, five hospital networks? They keep buying up all the other places. So there really is not much competition of any kind in terms of price. I mean, there's competition in advertising and all that other stuff. I mean, they would say they're incredibly competitive, but they're really not, appendectomy here for $3,000 with somebody else's
$4,000. They're not because they've negotiated all their prices with the insurance companies that pay for it, and that includes Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, again, it ties right into our.
So it's not competitive pricing. It's it's negotiated pricing.
Yeah, it's like,
and in other words, we're setting the floor for everything. We set the floor for what everything is going to cost, and then we work our way up from there.
Well, I was talking to Ricardo yesterday, and Ricardo is our new producer, nice kid. And I said, so what do you think of the show? And he says, because I love it. I don't understand much of it, but I'm learning it. He goes, don't dumb it down. I'll figure it out. And I said, okay. I said, once in a while, we got to go into a definition. He goes, yeah, sometimes when you get into the definitions, I get a little lost. I said, but Ricardo, someplace, somewhere, when somebody tosses around a term, maybe we should define the term instead of everybody just shaking their head up and down. I mean, yesterday I was talking with Hal, and I know I get too technical when I talk to Hal, but we were kicking the term around Fed funds rate. I said, okay, we've been talking about it for 10 minutes. We got to tell everybody what the hell it is. Because how many if you were sitting in a bar or a library or a coffee shop or whatever and said, all right, get out your pen and paper, give me a 10-word definition of what the federal funds rate is, I don't know that anybody, I mean, a few people could, but not very many people would tell you what that is. Yeah. So if you're going to talk about it somewhere along the line, you got to define it. I mean, what you just said, Kevin, is competition. Now, if you're one of these hospitals, you may have some prices that are nowhere near competitive, yet they think they're competing for doctors and for advertising, and they're spending a fortune on the air trying to get people to go there. They think that's competition. You and I would say, whose world is that competition? Our definitions now are getting so screwed up by the today's economy. They're not even definitions anymore.
Ain't that the truth?
But I mean, if you and I decide we're going to fix every price, if we're the only people that make car tires, and yet and we're going to say, look, this tire cost is $50 to make. By the way, the price is $250, and you go, yeah, it sounds pretty good. We're going to compete like hell by billboards. By advertising, by having the best-looking girls, or we're gonna have Tom Brady selling our tires. We think we're competing to all get out, but the price is still $250, right? Well, you and I might decide, hey, get rid of Tom Brady, get rid of the good-looking girls, and how about the price be $150? That's better for me. We don't want to do that, right?
Well, yeah, we're not in this case. We're not competing on the service, the quality of the service, or the service delivery. We're competing on. In terms of marketing and lobbying and it's the same thing in a lot of manufacturing businesses too, especially if you're a government contractor or anything like that, we divert talent. The rewards are all built into, to some extent, marketing, a lot in finance, a lot in tax accounting, places like that. That's where the expertise is drawn, because that's where the money is, and it really needs to be drawn to making stuff well and delivering stuff well. And to some extent it is, and it depends on the business, but I really think it's a shame, because the economy thrives when we are better at making stuff.
Well, when we talked earlier, I mean, those who haven't listened all the way, there was an article here We're talking about all these alleged nonprofit organizations getting massive amounts of money to take care of the migrant workers and you know, pick your place, whatever it is. This is happening all over the place. Now, and one of the places spent $700,000 on lobbyists. Now, in their mind, Kevin, they're competing like hell, or else why would you do that? So, I mean, in the words of George Stigler, he talked about graft. Somebody asked him about, you know, graft in the system. He said, well, if you had a free and open auction or a free and open bidding process, there could be no graft because there wouldn't be any money. I mean, if you had 15 legitimate firms bidding for a contract on the Dan Ryan, it's going to come down to a spot where people know the cost, they know the concrete, they know the steel, that the bidding process is going to end up being somebody willing to take a 10% profit, somebody else 15, somebody else 20, and that's what your bidding process ought to be. But say if it's a 10% process, then the next day the mayor calls up and says, I need 15 $500 tickets for my nephews running for alderman. They're going to say, Mayor, with this process you got, there's no money left. This is what I have to make. There's no money left for you.
For that, I needed 15%, not 10% margin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, a factor in there isn't just the price, it's ability to deliver as well. So, you know, and if you go back to medical, you know, it's the ability to deliver a high quality of service. You know, if you're going to reattach my thumb, it shouldn't fall off a week from now. I'll pay a little extra for it to stay attached.
That would be bad if it fell off. Hey,
that would be bad. Hard on hitchhiking. So, hey, I just pulled up to the RV Hall of Fame, which is kind of cool, and it's also an exhibition center. This is an annual event we have here, Career Quest. That they bus in junior high age kids, and you know, for 2 days they come in for hours at a time, and they all get exposed to as many different kinds of careers as we can show them.
Hey, Kevin, Friday, you hopping on two different things today, the phone and the other thing. I elected maybe to put it off, but we got a very nice letter. Stocks and Jacks has a lot of people around the world who listen. I have a whole bunch of people from the UK, and we have some people from Australia, evidently. And one of the gentlemen actually got Matty Weber tickets to some Australian band when they came here one time. Nice guy. So he sent us this letter regarding education and how he actually was in medical school or was trying to be a doctor, didn't make it all the way through, but he ended up with, like, no skills. And I thought, here's a question for Kevin. And as we talk about tuition and education and student loans and stuff, it's one thing to just criticize and say this is all screwed up. Well, of course, everything's all screwed up, but as my stepfather used to say, you're better off lighting a candle than cursing the darkness. Why don't we take that and run with it on Friday a little bit, Kevin? What could a different way be? And, you know, I keep talking about what my uncles and my mother used to tell me about schools when they grew up. I think there was a lot of that going on, Kevin, that your dad was a carpenter, and, oh, by the way, you took woodworking in school at the same time, maybe you helped him out on a Saturday. So you learned as you went, and I'm not so sure that we shouldn't be doing a little more of that now, or could be doing.
I think skills for life are important, and I also think, you know, and I'll just give you a preview of it, and then we can you can go to break, and I'll go inside. The one of the things that we do in college is, especially in a business curriculum, is we train people for the job that they hope to have someday. And we don't train them for the jobs they're going to do when they get out of school. And so you could talk about carpentry, you could talk about working on a production line or something like that, and becoming a team lead or a supervisor. And the idea is that you can off-ramp and on-ramp and off-ramp and on-ramp like crazy. Let me train you to be on a fast track to a supervisor role in a factory. And then when you start seeing yourself as a plant manager, come back for more. And, you know, I think it's a model I like a lot more than most of what we do.
So let's talk about that more on Friday.
By the way, do you have a model to be a supervisor in a chicken joint? Andrew might need that.
Andrew might need that. All he has to do for that is go on YouTube and find Los Pollos Hermanos employee training.
Really?
Yeah, it's perfect. Andrew, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I think I've seen exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So Los Pollos Hermanos was the place where the drug lord laundered all his money in Breaking Bad and in Better Call Saul. And Giancarlo Esposito, who was a really good actor, played the character Gus Fring on that one. And they recorded a bunch of videos that are just a whole lot of fun on the employee training for Los Pollos Hermanos.
Are you saying Andrew's part of the cartel?
Andrew could be part of the cartel because he knew right away what I was talking about. So I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's making me a little nervous, actually, that he knew that right away.
I feel like I'm being outed here. You're just blowing my cover.
Kevin, have a good time. We're going to head off to a quick break. Back with Mr. Dan Janitas and start prepping everybody for these CPI numbers.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. S&P futures up a buck and a half. NASDAQ futures down 250. So basically, nothing happening until we get to the our CPI number coming out. Do we have Mr. Dan? How are you, bud?
Looks like no Dan just yet.
Do we have a... Where do you suppose he is? I don't think I have an email saying he wouldn't be here. Why don't you try and track him down?
Yep, will do.
And I'll talk a little bit about some of these. I've got this AMC today. Let me see where I have it. I'll get it up here in a second. Our GameStop GME is. We'll see what it's doing this morning. These GameStops all popped in the last couple of days again. And we're not sure what the phenomenon here is totally is, except that evidently somebody comes out and says these things are in play, and then allegedly they're in play. So GameStop down 50 cents. It was a company went out and sold stock on Monday at $3.50 or something, and when it was coming up some, and now it's like 6:35. It traded over 7. So they have to think they could have got a little higher price, but they sort of did not. Not sure. Actually, you know what? Hey, Andrew, it's supposed to be Jan Flanagan today, and we have a what's his name dance tomorrow.
Oh, gotcha. I will reach out.
Yeah,
to
try
him
and
as well.
Try again if you can find Jan. But the numbers today, let me see what the expectations are going to be. The I'll give the expectations on everything here because I'll get the economic calendar up. I've got the CPI and I can review what was on last month.
Looks like he's joining right now.
There you go. John, there you are.
Hey, Tom, sorry for the delay.
Well, I screwed up. I thought it was, why did I think it was Thursday? I don't know. I was thinking, where the hell's Dan? But no, you're Wednesday. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
All right. We're just talking to Kevin about this thing we sent around with the nonprofit organizations. Why don't you get one of these things where we can each make $1 million, have 1.4 million in conferences. We could enjoy that. That's a lot of martinis. And we pay $700,000 to lobbyists. We get to do all that stuff, and when it's non-profit.
But maybe there's a reason why Melinda Gates resigned from the Gates Foundation.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean people aren't getting. You know what else? There's a lot going on. There's a lot of politics. I know one lady. I used to know, I haven't seen her in ages. She was on the board of one of these animal things. I don't know which one it was, but. Man, oh man! I don't even think they got paid, but the politics were pretty spectacular. What do you see when you, of course, CPI? Everybody's looking at 0.3. Last month was 0.4. CPI year over year 3.4 versus 3.5. Well, that number to me is absolutely useless. But the median forecast actually for consumer prices 0.4. Last month was 0.4. The core is supposed to be 0.3. So we'll see how that works. Retail sales supposed to be 0.4. Last month was 0.7. Is this phenomenon that we don't have? I talked about it in the military because you know we'll talk about it when Mike comes on. But we have people that do the meal, you know, the meal stuff at a base in Afghanistan. If we were still there, we have these other companies that seem to be making a lot of dough. Where military people used to do all this stuff, right? And now they don't. I mean, it's a phenomenon. And in Chicago, we're not just going to have money for migrant jobs. We're going to have 8 organizations close to the mayor to get all the money, and maybe they make it to the migrants, maybe they don't.
Preferably with no bid contracts, too.
I think we do have Mike. Hey, Mike, what's up, buddy?
Good morning, Tom and John. How are you guys
morning,
doing?
Mike.
We're kicking around loose and out this thing about the amount of nonprofit organizations that are doing work on the border, and you know that's the government essentially hiring them to take care of the migrant situations, and the numbers are huge. And I was saying when Mike comes on again, ask him, hasn't been there kind of flurry of that in the military too? The people that do the meals and the all the other kind of stuff. Where there's companies now doing this stuff, and most of those guys are making more than the people that are in the Army, right?
Well, yes. When I was in Germany, that's when it just started, because that's when deployment started, so they could use the contingency funds to hire contractors. And that became, I had civilian contractors who had worked years, for instance, for CIA, and then came over and worked for us at a, you know, they retired from CIA and then did very well with us. So
there's not like an auction in the paper where you and I have gone to bid on the job. It's a closed room transaction, shall we say?
No, it wasn't a closed room transaction, but they gave minority firms somehow a leg up in the process, and then the minority firms would get the contract for 2 or 3 years, and then they would end up selling to a bigger company. So some of the companies that were involved in this, there was one company that I worked with in Germany was called PTG, and then they got bought by Khaki. So that those were two, you know, and Khaki is a big firm that does communications. And you know, as you said, the cooks, you know, particularly in the deployed areas, they were all contract hires. Security, some of the security was contract hires. In Germany, in the wake of 9/11, we had eventually ended up getting contract security guards for all the bases and posts and whatever else was over there. So every post or base had their own particular, well, I think it ended up becoming one big firm. So contractors have become pretty prevalent in all the services.
And it seems like, well, that's what's happening. This isn't necessarily new that people get their finger in this pie. I ever tell you guys, I'll keep this brief. I ever tell you a story when it might have been the year before we entered college. So we're talking a long time ago. There was a, or maybe it was after freshman year, I'm not sure, but it was, Dan Ryan was having some kind of of course, in those days, things were different. They were going to redo, they were going to do something to the local lanes. They were going to take them all out, put new concrete in and so forth. And they were going to work 24/7, which, of course, they don't do now. They just take whatever damn time they feel like. So they were out to hire a whole bunch of people. So remember Jim Vervac and I, we would go, we knew where the hiring was. We'd go and we'd sit there for like 8 hours for like 4 days in a row. When are they going to hire everybody? When are they going to hire everybody? And everybody knew that there was some minority hiring going to take place. And I actually became very friendly with this African-American gentleman, and we'd sit next to him every day waiting for this. And it turns out, you know, he had a couple of kids, and I'm thinking, this guy deserves a job more than me. But it turns out, one may be dumb enough to think that just because he was black, that he was part of the minority group. You know how that works, guys. Well, it turns out, when another black guy comes by and he goes, you guys don't have a chance, you're not part of the coalition. And I said, well, what exactly is the coalition? Well, you got to be one of this guy's guys. Well, they were going to pay something, you know, this is a long time ago, $8.50 an hour or something, which is big dough. And I think the guy was going to get like a buck of that. And he was tied in with the city. So we sat there for like 4 or 5 days. Nobody hired. And all of a sudden, all the hiring took place on a Sunday night where this guy called these people up and said, be there, we're going to hire tonight. And they had to kick the guy who was either a buck or a buck and a half an hour the whole time they were there. So this is, it's disgusting, but it's not exactly new. But I think now it's kind of on new levels, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know, Tom, because I haven't been part of the hiring process for a long time.
I mean, this was you know, half a decade ago or half a century ago. But you see the two, and you guys remember this, the two, I'd say, different ends of the spectrum and helping people out in terms of, you know, if somebody doesn't have any money, how do you help them out? Well, the Johnson War on Poverty, back when it happened, well, Lyndon Johnson could have been the biggest crook ever in the White House, but anyway, he managed to pass this thing, and if you divided, what, the amount of money they spent by the amount of poor people and sent them a check, you wouldn't have had any poor people, right? Not saying that's, you know, there's a moral hazard with that, obviously, but, and then before that was Nixon came out and let's just have a negative income tax. If nobody's got any money, we'll send them a check and just get rid of all these people in the middle. And I don't know if you guys have ever thought about that, but Mike, those are two, I'm not so sure either end of the spectrum is flawless, but those are two ends of the spectrum, aren't they?
They sure are. And but even in our hiring of the contractors, I participated in two boards for hiring the contractors, and it was a relatively transparent process. Although, you know, people that were involved in the process were primarily former, you know, military officers or military individuals that had experience in those particular fields. So. And even where I used to work here, you know, biometrics ended up becoming a contract deal. So we had a contract for, you know, biometrics experts. But then bigger companies compete, and then everybody gets caught up in the umbrella contract.
What does that mean?
Well, for instance, like the command that I used to work for, Intelligence and Security Command, they would have like a, I don't know how many million dollar contract, and then they would hire one company to to do that contract, but then they would that particular company would hire subcontractors under the contract, so everyone kind of, well, somehow the major contractor got whether the majority of the money, but then they did sub it all out, so they would have smaller sub companies, and that was part of the game that they played on that.
Well, the reason why one of the reasons why this question has come up, I'm like, well, one is the thing that Lou sent around everything. The other is what John's been reporting on, and we're going to talk a bit more about it today, is the these buildings that are going. What was the one you sent me, John? Was that Fort Worth? Yeah. Now the question is, you know, I'll let John talk for himself, but there's these buildings that, you know, maybe have a mortgage on of $120 million, and they're going for like 15. So my question to John is going to be, okay, suppose five people call up Stocks and Jocks today and say, hey, we each got $1 million and we got 10 buddies. Tell your friend John Flanagan to take this $15 million and go buy us a building. My question is, do they even tell you where the room is, John, or is this all closed somewhere?
It's a crapshoot, Tom. I think it depends where it's happening. Supposedly, you know, an auction is open, but there's lots of ways you can control access to an auction, or you know, it's spotlight the people you want to be there, and whose bids have already been decided upon. I can't say how much of it is transparent. I do think, though, that if any lender was in the hole for as much as this, you know, the lender in Fort Worth was, they would love to see more money coming in at the auction. They don't want to take a bad path. They don't have to. So I have a feeling that there just aren't too many people interested in bidding on these things. It isn't that the process is, you know, targeting certain people going to benefit from a corrupt system. I don't think the interest or the money is there.
It seems to me that you look at replacement values on these places, though, you know, wow. You don't know how much they've been allowed to go into disrepair and everything, but it sure seems like if the economy ever picks up in some of these cities, it looks like a steal, but you got to be able to carry it, I guess, for a while, huh?
Yeah, well, you got to have cash flow on it, and, you know, that there doesn't seem to be any philosophical, you know, movement in that direction to encourage, you know, office space to be utilized as it once was, or to, you know, push businesses to open and to hire people. I don't see any drive in that direction, and I don't know that there will be anytime soon. So until that changes, I don't see any of these buildings becoming attractive investments.
Mike, the theme kind of is in the last week or 10 days is a listener has been sending me stuff. You know, and obviously, people on the right, more so than the left, even though it doesn't really matter, I guess, keep talking about, you know, competitive economy, business, and we're trying to figure out how much, as younger people, you know, Andrew can pipe in if he wants, I don't know what they look at our economy and see, because it's some sort of, I mean, there are some pockets where Kevin is in Indiana with the distribution systems and thing that I think are very competitive. There's some areas, you know, elsewhere, I think, in the transportation area, certainly in the bar industry and so forth, that are pretty competitive. But a lot of it looks like all the rest of the places, it's not anywhere near, I mean, the amount of alleged nonprofits, hospitals and stuff, and what chunk of societies they have, where people up top, they seem to be beholden to nobody and make a fortune, yet they're quote nonprofit. They don't even report to shareholders as if the big companies report to shareholders, but at least maybe they do a little bit. I mean, is this all a mirage that this our economy is nothing like, 80% of it is nothing like the textbooks say it is. It's not even close to being a competitive. I mean, Kevin and I talked about you and I might be in a fixed industry where we compete on TV with advertisement and we compete with lobbyists, but we're not going to compete on price. I mean, it just seems different to me. I mean, talk me out of this somehow.
I can't talk you out of it, Tom, because, you know, it does seem like things are much more streamlined, or I don't know how you would phrase it. You know, hospitals, you know, the costs keep going up, and I don't think we're getting more for our money. You know, let's say, okay, I was recently in the hospital. I probably should have stayed one or two more nights, but because they could put a catheter in me and send me home, they did that. And then it was up to my wife and I to figure out how to take the catheter out, although they gave us, you know, halfway decent instructions. So that, you know, in the healthcare industry, it's very difficult. And this is with the University of Virginia, so I'm assuming that's some sort of a public system. And it's difficult to get to see a doctor. You go to physician's assistants or nurse assistants, professionals, or whatever they're, you know, you don't get to the doctor level as you enter the system. And they do the televideo method, which is fine as long as it's not a serious problem. But you know, right now I kind of have a serious problem, and I think it would be difficult for me to go see a doctor other than going to the emergency room. And we have a neighbor that's, their daughter has had numerous issues, and she's had to always, the entry point is the emergency room. And, you know, and we all know what emergency rooms are like, but I guess that's the way that the corporation has deemed necessary to get in there. And then, as Lou talked about, the border, you know, maybe there should be soldiers at the border, or, you know, ICE, but there's obviously not enough ICE personnel to handle the massive inflows of immigrants that we're getting now. So, you know, so now you have Catholic Charities down there and whatever other NGOs handling, you know, getting people getting them not through the border. I guess that's the coyote's job. But then once they cross the border, the charity will, or the nonprofit will, take them and get them to different cities in the United States. And whether that's at government expense or subsidized government expense, I'm not sure about that, but I think it truly is happening. And that's a ploy by the government, you know, and this is conspiracy stuff, to get more voters. You know, I won't be surprised if we get a thing for migrants to vote in this election, but we'll see how that works out.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't get that connection that much, because, I mean, Chicago, 20% of the people show up to vote anyway. I don't know. It just seems so weird. How you can get these guys in a polling place. You can't get people that are here in their polling place, which is even more bizarre. Yeah, I mean, it's really, don't you get the feeling that just about everything is, I mean, if the three of us got dropped in the Oval Office, what would we even do the first day? I mean, out of the list of 40 things we can list we needed to do, what would be number one? I suppose to stop a war, but other than that, I mean, I don't even know how you'd start. There isn't any place you look where it doesn't seem like it's kind of screwed up, doesn't it?
No.
Have you seen the latest figures about unemployment among the newly arrived migrants? I mean, it's greater than 50% unemployed, and of course the hysteria has been, oh, we got to get work permits for these people. We have to, you know, get them to work right away. They all want to work. You know, let's put them to work. There's so many jobs that people born here are just refusing to do. So blah, 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 blah. And of course, now what it seems clear is that there aren't enough jobs to support the people that have come. And so many of the people that have come already have issues, whether they're aged and can't work, or they have illnesses, or they don't have literacy skills that can make them employable. So we got all sorts of things we now have to worry about, but it isn't translating to people, being employed, paying payroll taxes and everything else. It's just turning into a giant, you know, human services problem.
you know, it's, I don't, some of these solutions on the countrywide level, I don't begin to, you know, I don't know how you solve the border problem. I know you solve the Venezuela problem. I don't know how you do any of that stuff. I mean, I wish I did, but it seems to me that there's a migrant, I was going to use the word encampment, but placed by me, and they've been there for 6 months, a year maybe. And now I'm starting to see people heading down the block in the morning and hopping on the bus. They're, you know, taking the bus. They must be going to a job someplace. But, and one of our contributors to the show once in a while, an attorney buddy of mine, says, you know, nobody has a work thing or something. And yet I know that he's a real good friend of the guy who used to be mayor of Blue Island. And Blue Island, they loved it when the prisoners, they'd bust some of the prisoners that weren't the most violent, and they'd come out to Blue Island and they would work in a park, clean up a park for, you know, $10 an hour or 15, whatever it was, lower than you could pay other people. They actually loved it, Blue Island, because they got the park cleaned up. To me, if the three of us are sitting there, we're like, hey, here's 50 guys over here, they want to do something. By the way, our plant, nobody's cleaned the outside of our plant, and not that people should be degraded. There might be a couple of guys there. There are carpenters, a couple of ladies, nurses. But for today, can we pay everybody $150 cash? And, oh, by the way, I'll buy some credit union out of a church that's no longer around, and I'll have a credit union ready tomorrow, and everybody puts their money cash in the credit union, and if I pay them $150, they're going to put 15%, which is what your taxes would be, in the credit union, and we'll hold it there until they get their work permit, and then when we do, we'll send it all to the government. We could do this. Who the hell would say we can't? But on a small level, you can solve these problems for small periods of time. And over that several days or weeks where you get to know these people, you might find out somebody has some skills. You might find out somebody's a nurse. You might find out, you know, I mean, I don't know what we're doing. I mean, there's the huge problem you guys are always talking about that I don't know how to solve. But the small problems, I think, are solvable if somebody just does something. I mean, where am I wrong here?
Well, right? Maybe there are such people, Tom, and such skill levels. But what I see around where I live, there's a camp. I mean, it really isn't a camp as such, although it now has people with tents sleeping in it. But really, for the last 20 years in my neighborhood, there has been a place where, you know, temporary workers congregate every day, just hang around. You know, they don't speak English, as far as I can tell. I walk through this area quite a bit, you know, to and from stores. But they're not violent or threatening people by any means. But this has been going on a long time. People drive by and negotiate with them to, you know, I need somebody to, you know, build a garage. I need somebody to put in a patio. I need somebody to demolish something. I'll pay you X number of dollars. It's, you know, it's going to be in cash, of course. And there's a whole steady stream of these people that are there every day in all kinds of weather. There's people driving by hiring them and providing them transportation and so on. So this has been going on long enough where it makes me think that, you know, what this does to wages generally. I mean, if you got people who don't want to pay union scale, of course, and that's pretty expensive. There's plenty of people who will do grunt jobs, whether they're more or less, you know, qualified is another matter. But it's a black market is all it is. And once you have a black market that competes healthily with everything else, you've got a situation that just breeds trouble. We're still locked into this.
Hold that thought, Jack, because there was a while. A while back before COVID, we had all these people remodeling stuff in our neighborhood, and the guys were all Russian, and I'd be talking to them. But hold on, we're going to make a very quick break, and we're going to come back on this consumer price index. We got to shift gears. You guys have got to become experts on consumer price index in the next 30 seconds.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading investing ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 31, NASDAQ Futures up 123. Was I right on about this number being leaked? And here's the number came out at 0.3 versus 0.4 estimate. However, the unadjusted is 0.4. The adjusted is 0.3. So, Andrew, why don't you do, these numbers are all over the board here. So when everybody settles down around the rest of the world, I'll give those. Right now, why don't you just give real quick traffic, weather, sports. We'll get back to the guys and we'll go through these numbers.
All righty, sounds good. It is 7:32 here in Chicago on Wednesday, May 15th. Basically nothing but losses for our favorite baseball teams. Cubs lost to the Braves 0-7. White Sox lost to the Nationals 6-3. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Reds 6-2. Over in Chicago weather, things are looking a little bit better. They're at 54 degrees right now, cloudy skies, and that's going to stick around most of the day. We're going to have a high of 57. That's going to hit around 2 p.m. Stick around until about 5 p.m. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 72 degrees. They have clear, sunny skies, and that's going to stick around mainly all day once again. And they're going to have a high of 94. That's going to hit around 6 p.m. Now, finally, for some Chicago traffic, thankfully no major accidents to report, but things are pretty heavy on every inbound expressway. If you're on the outbound Eisenhower or the Kennedy, expect some delays. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
We have, you guys see these numbers? We're 0.3, but we've got the adjustment. I still can't, I wish I could figure out what the adjustment is on this stuff, because we're supposed to have just go out and find out what the prices are, but evidently there's some kind of a seasonal adjustment. I've got, again, unadjusted amount, 0.4, seasonally adjusted, 0.3, which is 1/10 under what was forecast, so the market's giddy about it. We're up 31, and I, you know, it's, this, the conspirator in me says this number is already out there to the right people because nobody cared about the PPI number yesterday. If you go down to the energy part, now they have actually gasoline was pretty high here. I've got this list is pretty darn long. Gasoline was up 1.1%. Actually, fuel oils and other fuels 2.3%. Energy commodities up 2.7%. Actually, energy totally 1.1%. Coming down in here in this area. They got utility pipe gas service down 2.9. I don't know where you get that. Energy services minus 0.7. So basically, the energy part was high. So, and the rest of the stuff was down. They've got food essentially only down very much. I mean, in this whole area, I've got this thing is so big it's hard to go through. But this is the part I don't quite get, the adjusted part. I could see Mike in your retirement. I could see you doing this, being the guy who's the dried beans, peas, and lentils survey. You think you could do that?
Oh, sure. Probably, Tom.
Well, if you did it, you came in with a 0.3% increase. Now, of course, this is nothing in the basket. Somehow, someplace, a guy like Flanagan says, oh, that's Mike, I know what the hell he's talking about. They got it down 0.2%. How do you adjust the peas number?
I have no idea, Tom. You got me.
Hide the peas.
Here's one. Roasted coffee. Now, we got roasted coffee and we got instant coffee. All right. Now, this is a good one. Roasted coffee was up 0.7%, and it was adjusted to minus 1.
Oh, wow.
Now, instant coffee, does anybody even use instant coffee anymore? The little stuff in the cups, is that considered instant coffee?
No.
It's not? Okay.
It's brewed. It's just not, you know.
Our instant coffee, whoever did that stuff, we put Mike on that as well, minus 2.3%. yet it got adjusted to being up 2%. They must really think that guy's an idiot who came in with that one, right? Whose desk do you drop this on, and who gets to do the adjusting? I'd like that job. Ah, this guy's right. I don't like this guy. He said minus. We're going to make it a plus. Sugar, down 0.8%, but actually they ratcheted it to positive points. It's not all one way. I mean, it's candy and chewing gum. They came in and said it was minus 1.1, and they ratcheted it to positive 0.8. Somebody's busy. Somebody's really busy. But what do you guys... I'll get down here to the rent piece as soon as I can find it. You'll be happy to know that men's suits, sport coats, and outerwear are down 2%. When was the last time you bought a suit, Mike?
Been a long time, Tom. Probably a good 10 years ago.
Yeah. Men's underwear, nightwear, swimwear, and accessories, positive 1.6. So there you go. Transportation, new vehicles, down 0.4%. New trucks, down 0.4%. I don't know where you're getting that. Used cars, down 1.4%. Good luck with that. But here's a good one. Prescription drugs are up 0.2%. Okay, that makes some sense, I guess. Non-prescription drugs, they got them up 1.1%. Recreation commodities, unchanged. Let's get down here to stuff about like rent and stuff. Alcoholic beverages, you guys are in on this one. Alcoholic beverages at home, unchanged. Beer, ale, and other malt beverages at home, up 0.7%. But here's the part we want to get to. Rent of primary residence is up 0.4%. Lodging away from home, down 0.2%. I don't know about that. The owner's equivalent rent, up 0.4%. Those are the ones that I think are usually have been understated now for 3 or 4 years. I mean, I don't... So what do you guys think about this report, just in general? You got the indexes up 26 now, and the S&P up 96. We've come off the highs a little bit, but still up. What do you guys make of this?
Don't ask Mike, do you trust these numbers?
Well, I mean, I
know, but yeah, Tom, I can't get into it like you can. You follow this stuff very closely. It now the fuel, maybe they're, you know, I guess the gasoline at least, you know, that'll go up because we're getting near Memorial Day and we're getting close to summer, so the gas prices will go up. And maybe they'll admit that, maybe they won't. Food prices, no idea, you know. So, you know, like peas and lentils.
Yeah, but who cares? But it gives you, when I do that, I don't do it just for to waste time and to bore people. I just, what I do is the actual detail, and this is the summary table, right? And if you go into the detail table, it's unbelievable the amount of people that actually do survey. I mean, we're not talking brown rice, it's jasmine rice, it's you know, pre-cooked rice. There's probably 50 different things for rice. I mean, the detail we go into this stuff, and it's just my complaints are in two areas. One is we still have medical care services at 6.5% of the
economy
of your basket, and yet
no, it's
it
well,
be, yeah, it's a little low, isn't it?
I would say it's a little low, but actually, I mean, the only price I pay, or the only cost that I entail is whatever I'm paying Medicare in Social Security, and then some shipping costs for drugs, or really at the counter costs for drugs. My medical costs, because I've been lucky to have good insurance, are relatively low. Now, is that accurate when I get a statement from TRICARE, which is one of my insurance providers, that says, you know, the insurance company was charged $725 for a visit, but TRICARE only paid $50. So, you know, that's kind of a magical numbers game.
Well, yeah, and it's part of, how can I say this properly, Jen? It's part of the, quote, problem, and that people look at what they pay, and yet you're really paying the whole amount. I mean, even though you think you're not. I mean, if you go get a job, and the guy goes, all right, we'll pay you 70 grand a year and we'll take care of your insurance. Well, they're really paying you 70 grand plus the 2,500 a month it costs for your insurance. So that's, you know, what is that, another 30? They're really paying you 105, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of money if you're getting insurance. But not many jobs pay with insurance anymore. Like,
we always did. I mean,
okay.
But I mean, I think.
Well, I have a part-time job now. That guy isn't paying any insurance.
Oh, right, right.
And, you know, so.
Well, that's why people's hours are getting cut, because they're getting down to the point where they don't have to provide insurance.
Right.
Stuff.
Yep.
I mean, that's my point. It's all part of this huge picture. You know, what you talked about, your medical issue, and by the way, everybody has one or will have one or something. You look at these big hospitals, you look at, like, the Northwestern stuff. I mean, they've got this massive, God, John, what are they, half a city, for God's sake? And the amount of money that pours into the place. And their commercials will be, what's the latest one? The guy that cut his head off and put it back on or something? What the hell is that one about? Have you heard that one?
I thought that was a sitcom.
No, some guy had some, I don't know, he had cancer in one of his upper vertebrae or something, so they cut his head off, took that vertebrae out, and put it back. It's incredible stuff.
Best we don't think about that at our age.
Well, but I'm saying, it's amazing stuff that medical science is able to do to people if you find the right spot in the right place.
And it's amazingly expensive to do it.
Well, but also, you go to Northwestern at night, which I was there, unfortunately, one night. You go in the emergency room and you say, this is friggin' Haiti, for God's sake. It's a third world place. Not, people aren't all black or anything like that. It's just, it is people coming in off the street. It's like a homeless shelter. So the medical ability is spectacular. The care, I think, is draining out the bottom. Yeah. I mean, the care is horrible.
I agree.
And
every hospital is like that.
Yeah. That's why, I mean, Mike, when you mentioned that earlier, don't you guys have those urgent care centers? Those around here, those are way better than emergency room.
Well, you know, I kind of go with the doctors that I've been affiliated with for years. I mean, this guy has worked on me for different things. You know, and we don't need to go into all that. And, you know, I trust him. So, I mean, I had to go to the emergency room for, it's a bladder stone. So the guy ended up getting me into surgery the next day, which was great, because I would have gone to the reunion and then I had a wedding to go to, and I would have still had this problem if he wouldn't have had the surgery.
Oh, yeah, you need access for sure. But if you... That's what your doctor gets you now. He gets you access.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're at the end of the bench.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so. It's. You know, it's. Did you listen a couple weeks ago? We had Diane Kellyanne. She's the lady who does the. By being in the military, you know what Fisher House is, right?
Yes, well, I do know what Fisher
House
is.
Well, Diane, she's now running the Chicago, or I guess maybe it's Illinois, Fisher House stuff, and we got into. John, you were listening, right? You were on with me. And where I said, you know, this is how everything in my mind always kind of ties together, the both of you guys, is that I said, you know, it's kind of weird that Chicago has, you know, Hines, you know, they've got this place going up in Great Lakes. They have some pretty reasonable veterans care, I think. And I said, but most of the people that are in the Army now, it's not like, if ever you've done it, I actually walked from... Times Square down to Wall Street one day in New York, because I just had never seen the whole city back when I could walk, you know, 10 miles. I go by this Catholic church, and on the door was the names of all the people who got killed in World War II, and there's like 40 people there. It was a huge parish, and the last 25 or 30 years, isn't like only like 11% of the armed forces come from the big cities? Mike, it all come from, when I say a lot of them come from smaller towns. I mean, your National Guard units and those people are in. They're the ones that are actually serving the reserves, and all of a sudden they get called back into action. And she says, yeah. And she had a, what'd she say, Jan? It was like a, make a big cross in the middle of the country, like south of Chicago, down, and then across the middle of the country, and virtually all or a high percentage of your armed service people come from that middle America area and not really from the cities or the coasts. And they don't have, they're not served by military hospitals like the cities are. that's one of the big reasons why you need the Fisher House, because somebody up here getting a new leg or getting a new something is probably from Danville or from, you know, from Evansville, Indiana or someplace. You know, have you found that, Mike, that, you know, that's a lot of the care needed for a lot of people isn't near them?
Well, that, well, in Virginia, I mean, they're coming from outlying towns, you know, because if, well, just, it's, you know, UVA, so Charlottesville is servicing, and they have clinics in all these small towns, but if they've got to have a major issue, then they come to Charlottesville. But they're, you know, Roanoke has a clinic, Culpeper has a clinic, and these are all smaller towns, you know, scattered throughout Virginia. So that, you know, goes to your point about, you know, they their access to the healthcare system is kind of limited. And we were in the waiting room for the surgery, and a woman had to drive 4 hours to get to Charlottesville for her husband to have whatever surgery he was going to have that day.
Well, you know, she's probably way off, better off than she did, instead of some smaller town doing it.
No, you're exactly right, but that she was funneled to Charlottesville, so probably, and I think she was from Southern Virginia, so down by Roanoke, so she had to get up with her husband, and then she waits around in the waiting room all day while he has his surgery, and then maybe he's released, maybe he's not. So, you know, but then they'll get the aftercare, I guess, back at their clinic in Roanoke or wherever she was from. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it can work like that, because you really don't want you guys always lead me to stories and other stuff that I. There was a guy at the University of Chicago in one of the classes I took. It was, Jan, what'd you call a class like this? It was like an application of business stuff class. So the guy had all kinds of different topics we went through. We designed compensation packages, which, is, by the way, is really hard to do. It's really hard to do. But he also was doing stuff on hospitals and how screwed up they were expense-wise, which is right what you're kind of talking about, Mike. And he was saying that out of all the hospitals in the country that were allegedly equipped, you know, this is in the 70s, to do open heart surgery, half of them had done either none or one. And he goes, the last thing you want is to be in a place where you're the only person they do open heart surgery that year, because you got like no chance. you want to go to a place where they do 40 of them a day, because that's what they do. And
right. Yeah.
So what you're talking about, Mike, actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, the question is, is there competency at the local or neighborhood level? Don't have to be local. Neighborhood level to say, this is your issue. By the way, you take 2 aspirin and go home and don't drink for 2 days if you're on that level. Or if it's, wait a minute, that's not working. It looks like you have a problem. You need something done in the next couple of days. Can they somehow filter you up in an efficient manner to get somebody to where they can get taken care of? That's a really tough thing to do. It's the right thing to do, right? I mean, if you're going to have open heart surgery, I don't, people don't have that much anymore, or even a cath lab, you want to go to some place that has, that's what they do, right? You don't want your local guy going, hey, how do you put this cath lab together, right? I mean, you don't want that.
So, yeah. That's true, but it just puts the additional onus is on the people to get there, and then then they're more or less responsible for the post care. Although if they, you know, and insurance is driving that, so that's a big company. You know, if you're hurting their profit margins, you know, you're out of the hospital.
Well, my first experience with this, my buddy Dr. Jay, this German guy, was living with him, right? Working with him, but he was from Germany. He was going to come here, but he's living with John for a while. Big house, John and his wife. So all of a sudden, the dude has to have some hernia surgery. Hernia surgery isn't that difficult if it's not on you, but it's not great either. So he says, how about taking care of the guy? And I go, I don't know nothing about taking care of somebody. He goes, well, we're going up to his parents when they were alive in Minnesota. We're going up there. And I said, all right, I can take care of a guy for a day. I mean, the guy's in the hospital. He's from overseas. He says to Northwestern, how much to stay the night? I'll pay you cash. Now, we got to kick you out today. Well, do you have empty rooms? Yeah. How much are they? You know, at the time they were like $800. I'll give you the $800. Nope. You got to go. Well, the guy, he's there, and he's a big, strong guy. I mean, he wasn't like he's a weenie or anything. He couldn't get out of bed. Without, I mean, all he had to do was grab his hand and pull him up, you know, but there's no way he could put his socks on, you know. I mean, he could do right. pretty much everything else. There's no way 5 hours after hernia surgery you're getting out of bed by yourself. I mean, all you need is a helping hand, but still you need something. I mean, I can only imagine if he was a you know an old guy or something. How do you send somebody like that home? You better have somebody there who knows what they're doing. Which wasn't me, but at least I helped him get out of bed. I mean, you know who started this? Your guy's hero, Dutch, Ronald Reagan. When he came into office, this is how screwed up an industry can be. Mike, you got me on this subject. It's all your fault. He used to be what, 5 days in the hospital if he had a baby, right? I mean, it used to be like 10, yeah. but then it was 5 days, and Reagan decided, no, we're going to cut back, since, you know, government's paying for a lot of it, we're going to cut back to 4. Okay, so they cut back to 4. In most of your areas that were designed, they knew how many babies they had per month, and they knew how many rooms they needed for everybody to stay 5 days. What you ended up with was 20% of the rooms were open, and the price was the same for 4 nights it used to be for 5. Now, the three of us could sit there and go, that's exactly what you would expect to happen, right? So it's not like it's any cheaper now that they kick you out the same day. Is it?
No, I kind of doubt it, right?
So, anyway, now these numbers were up. Does this mean everything's okay? The Fed can keep putting money in? What do you guys make of this? I mean, everything we're talking about, let's conclude it. Borrowing's going up. Spending's going up. Interest rates are down again today, but I don't see how they stay down. But let's say they do. Where does this, quote, end? I mean, with the middle class and below, their borrowing's going up. Don't seem to be able to pay them. What's the end game to this? John, you first.
Well, I don't think these numbers are useful, you know, for the kind of questions you're asking at all, Tom. I mean, when I go through this, I can't find anything in here about what's happening with homeowners association expenses, condo assessments, special assessments, nothing like that. That doesn't figure in rent or housing in any form that I see on this table today.
Well, did you find the insurance line? I'm looking for it.
Well, insurance, motor vehicle insurance is up almost 2%. 1.8, I think. Well, that's property insurance looks like it isn't up that high. But my concern is where you've got states like Florida now that because of sinkholes and weather emergencies, the state has now started surveying every condo project in Florida to determine whether they've got sufficient reserves for the kind of expenses that this project can you know reasonably face. And you know if you're under reserved, of course, then you have to come up with the deficit, which means everybody in the condo has to kick in, you know, gazillions of dollars in some cases. None of that figures in this kind of assembly of data that I can see at all, but it means, you know, people who are suddenly going to be completely underwater in their housing. They're not, you know, their mortgage costs won't necessarily have increased. Their insurance costs may not have increased, but their assessments are going to blow everything else out of the water. And that means they're going to have to sell or go bankrupt or something else. So I don't see any of that even bothered about in this kind of table. So those are the things that are going to make a huge difference to people in the state of Florida. And I just don't see that this is ever going to translate into any kind of emergency. So I assume that there's other things like that this table doesn't care about. But the people themselves who are behind this data certainly care about, and it means being up, you know, with your head above water or underwater.
Well, we're in here. Again, you and I are looking, I think, at the same table. We're in here. It is like a new roof or a new air conditioner or the installation or a plumber. Where does that pop in here? Because that's what seems to be killing a lot of people around here.
Well, I mean, the only thing I can see here is in household operations. There's domestic services, gardening, lawn care services, moving, storage, repair of household items.
Well, what is that one showing?
It's blank.
Oh, it's blank. It's great. Because it's, you know, I talked yesterday a little bit, but there's no review on this stuff. You know, when I say review, nobody, what if the three of us instead of having different, if 10 years ago we all got together and said, we're going to build houses for people, we could figure out how to do that, hire guys and so forth. And we guaranteed somebody a house at $250,000, 10 houses a year for 10 years. If we use the CPI as an escalation clause, we're out of business, I got to believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, where is all that going? The idea of, you know, your dishwasher used to be $300, now it's $500. I mean, the stuff like, or you can pay $1,500 for a dishwasher if you want. How do we just lose track of that totally, and yet we continue to publish these numbers? I mean, there's stuff.
That's by design, Tom. It's to create a smoke screen to make everybody think it's in their imagination they're suffering. Everything on paper is just fine. Why complain?
Well, when did you guys? You guys are every man. I'm stuck with these numbers my whole life. I mean, I did this when I was at Pullman. I was the escalation clause guy, okay, at least for the contract that I was involved in. And nobody ever really said, say your CPI was up 1% for the month. And I'd call up the guys at Boston and I'd say CPI is up 1%. I don't know that I thought it was really 0.9 or 1.1, but it seemed like it was pretty close. You know, that the government was charting what was actually happening. When did it get to the point where you say there, go, wait a minute, they got higher education up 80% in 25 years, it's really up like three times? Or something. When did they fall off? Or is it just you're off by a half a percent a month and after 20 years it starts to make a difference? You think there was a time when this all changed, or just over time it just sort of got away from them?
I think over time it's just got away from them, Tom. Plus they probably manipulated the statistics, you know, over time, and they keep everything down some. But, you know, I think that's for political reasons, whatever. So
right. Well, I think in the 80s, Tom, when deficits really started to explode, and, you know, nobody seemed to have any interest in, you know, backpedaling on any spending, and the politicians certainly didn't want people thinking that, God, this can't continue. This is, you know, the fast train to hell. But I think that's when the data started to just disconnect, and it started to, you know, be used as a tool to reassure people that everything else we're doing in the economy that's screwing things up, you should pay no attention to, because it really isn't having any effect on these basic numbers. That's what you should be following, and everything is just fine there, so don't worry about it.
Well, without pinning blame on anybody, if you had to guess an administration, where do you think that the deficit stuff just got out of hand? I mean,
Reagan, absolutely.
You think it was Reagan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Stockman has come back and pretty much admitted how all of that bourgeois about trickle-down economics and everything was just, you know, a complete line of BS. And he should know, because he was there at the beginning. So,
well, I've got the... right now we've got national debt of $34 trillion. I'm pushing 35. Gross domestic product of 28. So the debt's way above that. Right, if I go back on this time machine to the earliest you can go is 1980. All right, 1980, national debt was not a trillion, it was 964 billion. Gross domestic product was 2.7 trillion. So in 1980, GDP was three times the national debt. All right, so then the next world we can, wait a minute, I screwed this up. The next time machine is 1990. So who was president between 80 and 90? National debt was $3.3 trillion, and domestic product was 5.5. So still, it's like 60% of GDP. So from 80 to 90, we're probably starting to cook a little bit. But then the next time you look at it, 2000. So who was president between 90 and 2000? We've got 5.5 in the national debt. And we've got gross domestic product 10.6. And if anything, it got better between 90 and 2000. I'm sure as hell not going to blame Clinton, but I'm saying somehow it got better. Now, when you kick up to 2004, was Bush, right? Let's go to 2008. That's when Bush was there.
Civil wars, too.
Yeah, we had that. Well, plus, you know, we had now we're starting to cook. National debt's 11.6, and GDP is only 14.4. So now we're up to what, 75%? So I would say those are the eight years where it started, 2000-2008. Is that when that was Bush 1, right?
No, that Bush was two, Bush 2.
So that's when he put essentially the Iraq war on a credit card, right? And we had all the 9/11 stuff.
Right, exactly.
And so from then on, it pretty much has been a rocket ship going the wrong way.
It's just been a slippery slope ever since.
Well, then we'll go to 2016 and Obama, and he's 21 trillion in national debt, 20 trillion in domestic product. So now he was the first guy where the debt went over the domestic product. So when he was in office, domestic product went up by 5 and debt went up by 7. So he's just as guilty, right? And then I don't think Trump wound it back at all. Trump were 28 and 23, so he made it even worse, and now it's even worse. So it's been pretty much all the way along the line, and the idea that we keep electing a different party to the White House doesn't seem to make any difference, does it?
No, and whenever the Simpson-Bowles recommendations were, Tom, you know, and I think that was in the 80s or maybe early 90s.
I think that was early Obama, Mike.
No, I think it was earlier than that. But, you know, they didn't do anything with that, and now they're talking about having another bipartisan commission to make recommendations again, which they probably won't do anything about. So, and now servicing the debt is more than I think the military budget now in the current budget. So now they're, you know, we are, and really it's our children and our grandchildren will pay the piper on this massive debt that, you know, the baby boomers have essentially incurred. So, you know, that gets to your, you know, whether that's a summary or not, but something has to give, whether it's the third rail of politics, which is Social Security, Medicare's got to change somehow. We can't just keep incurring debt.
By the way, 2010, President Obama, Simpson-Bowles.
Oh, really? Okay. So 2010. So they didn't do anything with it. So, and they had a chance then. So, and, you know, granted, we also had the pandemic. So that's Trump's excuse. But, you know, that should have been means tested or something, you know, and I'm guilty because I took the money too. So,
did you remember the guy's quote? One of the guys, they both a couple of hatchet faced dudes, but the taller guy. He said, if this doesn't piss you off, then we either didn't find you or you didn't read it yet, or something like that. What he talked about, all the cuts they were going to make?
Well, unfortunately, something's got to give. And, you know, we can't, you know, we just can't keep financing, you know, and now we're essentially financing, you know, Israel, and we're financing Ukraine. And, you know, the American people end up paying for this. So
last question, which is a doozy. When you see the world debt and where it's going, what was it, $322 trillion I talked about the other day? Are we going to see some places default?
Sure. Maybe us.
That was my next question. Yeah. Where are we in that spot? I mean, you're right. We're talking at we're 2024. Our debt is we got a dash here, we're over, but that's all right, you guys are worth going over with. I got so much up on my screen here. I'm gonna say there's got to be a number here, how much we pay in interest per year, but you're right, Mike, I'm not seeing it on this page, but so we're up to 34.7 trill. Even if you, every time they roll over this debt now, it's got to be getting near more. It used to be like 1.5%. It's got to be pushing 3. So even if it's 3, God bless. 10% would be a $3.4 trillion a year. That's kind of a lot, but it's not. It's not that. So say it's $1 trillion bucks. I don't think the defense part budget is $1 trillion, is it? It can't be.
Tom, I don't know, but
oh, here we
I
go.
Read somewhere that the
Defense Department budget is 889. Here, you're almost close. No, almost close. How's that for a dumb thing to say? Largest budget items, 1.7 Medicare, Medicaid, 1.4 Social Security, $889 billion defense slash war, $828 interest on debt. That's only going up, right? You're right. It's gonna pass it pretty quick. All right, guys. Thank you. Hey, Mike. We got no Lou tomorrow, so if you're around, I'll talk to you maybe a little bit of the war report. John, thank you very much. As usual, will I see you pretty soon? Want me to see you before the reunion? He ducked out, that guy. SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 85. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.